Psych Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Valentine's Day, seen by many as a romantic occasion, is a couple of weeks away. But in Brazil today, another observance has its own romantic connotation.
Today is the Day of Saudade, inadequately described as a nostalgic longing for something.
We tell you this not to give you your own nostalgic longing, but to introduce our next guest, for whom saudade was one of more than 50 words she studied, defined, and illustrated to create her recent book.
Ella Frances Sanders is the author and illustrator of Lost in Translation, an illustrated compendium of untranslatable words from around the world. And it was fascinating and thought-provoking enough that we reached Ella Frances Sanders via Skype from the English countryside. So nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
I am always reluctant to ask something as basic as where an idea came from, but let me ask maybe a closely related question. Was there one single word in this collection that set you on this path?
It's a good question, but the answer is unfortunately no. It's sort of, I've spoken a little bit about it before, but it's the books grew out of a blog post. So there was already a sort of a collection of 11, and that was really the beginning, this really quite innocent blog post of untranslatable words. I thought it was innocent.
Did you come to the book or the project with any previous particular interest in the intricacies of language?
Well, no. I feel like often, you know, people talk about that sort of side of things, and I feel like I should. But if anything, it's happened the other way around. I mean, I didn't happen to the book. It definitely happened to me. So I feel like it's been sort of, the whole thing's this freak accident, obviously incredibly positive freak accident. But no, in terms of the, you know, intricacies of language and what have you, it's definitely something I've become a hell of a lot more interested in post-book, as it were. Yeah.
you sort of become a de facto expert on these.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that. Sometimes, if someone asks the right question and I just so happen to have the right answer, it sounds quite maybe intellectual. I don't know. Probably not.
It's funny. That's the way journalism works, too. Do you speak any other languages?
Well, I studied a couple at school, but as everybody probably knows, you don't use them and they sort of get lost in these really dusty corners of your brain. I've started learning German again recently. My parents both speak it, and I sort of wanted to feel like I was in on the, I don't know, just, you know, doing something proactive. And I often think, oh, you know, you hear someone speak a language, or I come across one of these words, and it's almost enough to sort of start me down some, a polyglot path or something. But I really don't think my brain is designed like that, unfortunately.
Well, you know, by the nature of these words, they are words that don't have direct English translations. So How did you set about trying to find them?
Well, this is where I feel like I had this really exciting sort of adventure story where I traipsed across the globe and found, you know, tiny native-speaking corners of... But the book schedule was 3 months, so I had to do sort of a lot of gathering, a lot of researching. I extensively used online resources just because they're so accessible. But of course, people think the internet is all-knowing and all-seeing. But unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation and incorrect information. So it means that you have to do a lot of double-checking of these sources, and you have to trace them back to who and to whatever. And very often you end up on really obscure websites in foreign languages, which I obviously don't understand. But I think we ended up with quite a good bunch in the end.
Well, and I would imagine there's a certain amount of pressure to really get these right. You wouldn't want to, you know, do an injustice to people who speak Tulu or Welsh or any
exactly.
of the other languages.
Exactly. And it didn't feel like pressure at the time. But then afterwards you think, you know, damn, I hope it's all right. But, I mean, people do become very, very involved. And there's been a few instances where native speakers of, say, Italian or Russian have been commenting and disagreeing with themselves, even not even with me anymore, just disagreeing with themselves as to whether this word exists in this language. Or it's great. People like to be involved.
Did you find that some languages lent themselves to these kinds of words more than others?
Well, funnily enough, German has, I mean, I probably could have done a book just with 52 German untranslatable words, to be honest.
Well, the Germans have this habit of just making compound words, just attaching one word to another to another.
Exactly. And for them, that works. It means learning it is a complete nightmare, of course. But yeah, German has a lot. And I suppose Yiddish has proportionally quite a lot of them. And Scandinavian languages as well. They seem to be doing their own thing.
Well, and you mentioned German, and I thought maybe the funniest concept in the book was the German word Warmduscher, which maybe you could do us the favor of telling us about Warmduscher.
Well, it's sort of like calling someone a bit of a wimp, I guess. So, and I would probably, I don't know if I would be a Warmduscher. Well, someone who doesn't have a really, really boiling hot shower, and someone who doesn't have a really, really icy cold shower. You just have, you know, a warm shower. So it's definitely not a compliment, but I have to know, kind of a gentle insult, I think.
Does the existence of words like these say something about more than just the concepts they describe? Do you think it reveals something about the respective languages and maybe the cultures they represent?
Definitely, but I think actually it goes, like if you went a step beyond that, it sort of becomes more universal. And actually, well, most of the reason why I really liked this project was because you kind of show human beings as exactly that, as being really human, and there's these sort of universal links. So, you know, like food and family and relationships and our sense of home and our sense of who we are, and all these things sort of relate to that. So some of them express things to do with the relationship side of it. Some of them are more humorous, and some of these words you would sort of think about, or they'd come up if you were alone. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking, nobody's going to know what I'm talking about because I'm not giving any examples.
Well, so maybe, you know, the one that jumps out at me is this Portuguese word from Brazilian culture, saudade, which maybe speaks to a universal idea, but one that other languages can't quite put their finger on.
Yes, and I guess it's something you would find yourself feeling, or even if you didn't know that it had this word, that the Brazilians had a word for it, that it was sort of something you felt alone. It was not something, really, to me, it wouldn't be a feeling you shared with other people, or it's quite an introspective, not depressing. I think it's too beautiful to be depressing, but
maybe melancholy.
Yes, exactly.
We should define it here because people might be lost at this point. And you define it as a vague, constant desire for something that does not and possibly cannot exist, a nostalgic longing for someone or something loved and then lost. And I gather this was one of those touchy words that people were concerned that you might not get right.
Well, also that I didn't really could do justice to within this short, you know, translation, as it were, because there's entire essays on this concept. There's pretty sure there's books. It's a really specific thing to try and pin down, and it's probably quite impossible to do in, you know, a sentence or two. Yeah, I think it would have needed a whole book alone, but I feel like it was sort of hopefully, yeah, helped, aided by the illustration, I guess. That was the other thing. With the ones that were harder to define and harder to put into this rough translation, the sort of illustration hopefully met it halfway, and the two of them, you know, gave this understanding.
Well, and you do have the luxury of being, if I may say so, a really remarkable illustrator, especially as it comes to these words.
Thank you. This sort of project I hadn't done, and I hadn't combined words and pictures. I like to say pictures because it sounds so childlike. Words and pictures in this way before. But it was really interesting because you sort of, I remember at our art school, they would tell us, like, you don't need to draw the thing and write the thing. The purpose of illustration is to sort of illuminate, and you wouldn't need to, try and think of an example, like, you wouldn't need to write apple and then draw an apple on the same page. You just do one or the other. But actually, it was really nice having words and images.
Well, and many times you're writing about a feeling, and you know, capturing a feeling in a picture is really a remarkable thing.
I tried. It was funny because some of them I would well, obviously we spent a long time sort of refining the list of words, and we narrowed it down from, I don't know, like 200 to the 52. So they're all in your head for this time, and you obviously subconsciously begin to think about some of them. So in some instances, the image, the illustration was already there, and in others it was sort of, you know, 3 days would go by, didn't have any ideas. And obviously the short time scale means that this added pressure, definitely contributes to a sense of panic when you don't produce things so rapidly. But I was pleased, really, at the end, I guess. I don't feel like the time meant that anything had to be really sacrificed. So, yeah.
We should talk about a few more of these words. And as you say, there are a handful of Yiddish words in this book, including one that that many people here in Milwaukee probably know because it figures into the theme song from a television show that was set here.
Okay.
people might be familiar with the word schlamazel, but you actually define it. What is a schlamazel?
So, well, yes, I guess in one sentence it would be someone who never has anything other than bad luck, just, you know, bad things happen to them. And I know a couple myself, so yeah, I think everybody does. I mean, maybe you think you don't, and then actually that is you. That's the other thing. But yeah.
Well, I was going to ask whether there was one word in this book that you think was most applicable to yourself.
Oh, well, the Japanese word buketo. I don't know if you know the one I'm talking about.
Maybe I do. I was going to ask about that
word. You're laughing. Yeah. So this is, Look, it's not a very good thing.
That was my next question because my wife says you put it in there just for me, even though you didn't know me. So.
Oh, great. So looking, gazing vacantly, sort of not really thinking about anything specific. I don't think it could be daydreaming as such. It's more, I think if you did this, you'd know what it was. But not really thinking about anything particular, not really focusing, gazing out at the distance. Yeah, I definitely like to dedicate time to that sometimes. Yeah. It's a priority sometimes.
Well, and there's another Japanese word in this book, and you know, we have a lot of readers in our listening audience, and I imagine many of them would relate to the concept of tsundoku, which is not a math puzzle, but something book related.
It sounds like Sudoku, doesn't it?
It does.
I haven't made that connection either, really. So this is the sort of, I do this too. It's awful, but you buy books because their books, and very often with me it's just, you know, the smell of them or the nice cover or I like the name of the title. But yeah, so you buy books and they sort of pile up together with the other books that you haven't read. Yeah, I mean, in the illustration I've got really piles and piles of books, so hopefully it's not, that's almost hoarding stage. But no. I mean, they're friendly, you know, books are friendly, so it's nice to have some, yeah, stacks of books.
I wonder if you used a different language as a starting point. Let's say you were writing this book in Finnish or Welsh. I wonder if there are English words that would represent ideas that a single word in Finnish or Welsh could not.
I don't know. See, I thought about, I mean, right at the beginning, I very nearly included, I wanted to do a couple of English ones that were undetectable, but then that sort of destroyed the whole book proposal that I had said to the publisher. But the word serendipity, I think, is pretty much untranslatable if you were going to go from English into anything else.
Well, and of course, the trick in English is that so many English words are derived from other languages that it's,
exactly, yeah, especially French and things. So, yeah, it's not that difficult to get back again.
Your book is obviously not some big call to action, but what would you hope this book spurs in your readers?
I suppose the sort of awareness of the similarities or dissimilarities of other cultures, whether they're sort of like the country next to you or the country on the other side of the world. You know, that sort of awareness is always nice. And just sort of, it's not like a really deep understanding. It's not pushing people to, you know, go out and start researching or reading other languages. But I think just having these words floating about, or it's like this gentle awareness, I think.
Are there enough words that were left on the cutting room floor that there could be another collection of these?
Ooh, definitely. We could do several volumes. Oh, that would be great. We could have a box set. This is ideal.
Well, Ella Frances Sanders, thanks. And I do hope your book does not end up in too many Sundoku collections around the world.
Thank you.
Ella Frances Sanders is the author and illustrator of Lost in Translation, an illustrated compendium of untranslatable words from around the world. You can see some of the words and pictures from the book at WUWM.com.
And are there other words out there like these that didn't come up in our conversation? Drop us a note by social media. Lake Effect is on Facebook and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you.
We'll take one last break, and then the Fine Arts String Quartet joins us in the studio to talk about their concert this weekend and to perform a movement from one of the pieces on the program. You are listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.